Happy Friday, everyone. It's August 14th, and this is the LA Report. I'm Leo Duran. Today, an update on the Lake Fire, now on its third day. The LA City Council steps in to help businesses in historic locations, what's being done to protect farm workers, and Servant of the Pods, Nick Kwa, joins me to talk about pornographic podcasts. Some of California's most destructive fires in the past few years were caused by sparks from power lines. Large utility companies reduce the risk of fire by turning off power in certain areas, but it's an unpopular tactic. Our infrastructure reporter, Sharon McNary, explains.
When people don't have power, they're very annoyed. Southern California Edison shutoffs keep its power lines from starting fires, especially in these foothill and mountain areas. Edison cut power to more than 120,000 homes and businesses last year during hot, windy weather. Now, some of these outages went on for days. Some rural families actually need electricity to power their water wells. The company says it's upgrading its equipment to reduce the number of outages to fire-prone areas this year, but still about 80,000 customers could face these public safety power shutoffs. So Edison's offering rebates on backup power generators and batteries to help people get through these outages.
This week, the LA City Council took a step to help businesses in one of the area's most historic locations. With more, here's Robert Grova.
The 60 or so businesses that call the historic monument home pay rent to the city. They can delay payments while the pandemic health orders are in place, but eventually they'll have to pay. On Monday, the City Council Budget Committee agreed to a plan that would forgive rent from July to December. The full council would still have to approve the measure. That would be good news for businesses like La Luz del Dia restaurant. I talked with owner Gregory Berber. He told me his family has been selling food on Olvera Street for close to a century. But since the pandemic hit, he says business has been down 90%. The restaurant pays about $13,000 a month in rent too. Berber and other Olvera Street business owners say that without support like this from the city, they may have to permanently close.
Next, California's farm workers remain at risk in this pandemic. Here's Take Two's Marina Pena on what's being done to protect them.
We spoke to Irene Bayraikua, a farm worker advocate with the group Líderes Campesinas. She said farm workers continue to be vulnerable during this pandemic because there isn't enough education on COVID-19 out on the fields, and many of them lack access to healthcare. Most workers are undocumented and uninsured. Irene also told us that California's Division of Occupational Safety and Health, better known as Cal-OSHA, has stepped up by providing guidelines specific to farm workers and requiring employers to put a COVID-19 prevention plan in place. But she says more needs to be done, like deploying healthcare professionals to the fields so that farm workers have more access to help.
Podcasting is in the middle of a boom, and many industries are trying to get in on the action, including porn. In this special episode, Nick Kwa is with me. He's the host of the LAist podcast, Servant of Pod, and his latest episode is with the creators out there hoping to make a big splash in porn podcasting. Hey there, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. So porn, obviously it's more of a visual medium. You gotta look at something. But what we're talking about here, how does audio porn work?
So it's interesting that the assumption is that porn is visual, where, I mean, I think it's, you know, for a lot of historical technological reasons, it's sort of shaped out that way, that that's the thing that has the most, shall we say, reaction. It's the thing that most people have gravitated towards when it comes to porn production and porn consumption. But the thing that I was sort of trying to examine here and try to understand is sort of how this community and business of creators of, you know, adult content are taking to audio as a potential output for that kind of work. And what I discovered is, on the one hand, you know, on the creative side, there's a lot of emphasis on different kinds of, you know, stimulation and attention. It's very fantasy driven. It's very writerly. And so there's a way in which I think these creators are kind of pushing at the possibilities of what erotica and pornography could be from a from a creative standpoint.
Yeah, I thought of it more of like an audiobook of one of those erotic novels, you know, with Fabio on the cover draped in yards of fabric. So in that way, I thought of it's more like erotic fiction than porn, but, you know, getting at the same kind of audience. Who's making these kind of podcasts and who's their audience?
So primarily people who are, you know, drawn to you know, that kind of adult writing. And it's the thing about audio erotica and audio porn is that it's very sort of cosplay-ish. It's very sort of play acting-like. So since the lockdown started, I think one of the things that we've seen is that a lot of adult performers have taken to building communities and businesses online. And, you know, there's a sort of subgenre or subcommunity of people who focus specifically on the audio side. And so, you know, they've been sort of largely trying to find ways to access and create communities and audiences on their own terms and to create sort of experiences and products that are, you know, you can't really find them within the quote unquote mainstream.
And what I did notice in that episode is that, you know, usually who's out of that mainstream, it's women. And it sounds like women are driving this desire for porn podcasts.
Absolutely. And I think part of it comes from the theory that a lot of mainstream porn or industrial porn, it's not, you know, super women centric, or it's not really catering to that kind of desire or that sort of market demographic. And so there, it feels like what we're seeing in terms of the population of audio erotica creators, it's filling that gap. It's filling that sort of need for, pornography for women that probably didn't really have that much of a way to grow within traditional market forces.
And what's a little different is that it's, because it's audio, it's more story-driven rather than visually driven. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, one thing that I sort of really noticed going through the material is that the gaze is very sort of towards the listener in a way that I think conventional porn, it's very much of an outward gaze. It's kind of a, you know, a voyeuristic kind of relationship. But with a lot of these audio erotica experiences, it's a creator kind of speaking directly to the listener. And there's this sort of, it's a very potent kind of fantasy building because the gaze is so user-centric, quote unquote.
There's more to this story, including what a big publisher of porn thinks about this trend, Pornhub. You can hear it on Servant of Pod with Nick Kwa, available each week on Wednesday. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks a lot, Nick.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to today's LA Report. Our reporting is made possible by listeners like you. Please donate today at las.com/donate to keep local news strong during this uncertain time. That's laist.com/donate. We'll have another report for you on Monday. Until then, be safe. I'm Leo Duran. The LA Report is produced Monday through Friday. Subscribe using your favorite podcast app or smart speaker. And for the most up-to-date news around the clock, be sure to check in at laist.com/latest. That's laist.com/latest.